This is KBOO Portland.
KBOO's Fall Membership Drive will kick off September 15th, and our theme is The Sounds of Democracy. KBOO is non-commercial, independent, and community-supported radio, one of the most democratic forms of media. During the drive, we'll feature content focused on democracy throughout the radio day. On September 15th, the Old Mole Variety Hour will look at democracy through the lens of cultural work, how the arts like music, photography, theater, and fiction raise up the voices of those too often silenced by the corporate media. As a premium for KBOO donors, the Moles are offering prints of Betty Lee's photography, which document two decades of activists in the streets of Portland. For details, visit the Old Mole webpage on kboo.fm. And thanks for your support. Music by Hanto Beatmaker.
KBOO, Portland, Oregon. Bridging the gap between prisons, prisoners, and the community. This is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
All right. Tin can phones here. Oh, yeah. Recording. Queez, take us on.
Intro.
Mike and Armand Joe, Queez, we the ones that you can depend on to bring the voices from the inside out. Locked down, but they not locked out. No filter over here. Check what we be talking about. Feet up in the trenches, bop. While you're on defenses, metal detector before you enter. Shaky medical and see your stitches. They be pushing their weight around. Educate, didn't have the time to wait around. Taking classes while they played around. That's what we call staying down. What we call staying down. That's what we call staying down. Mike, Armand, Joe. Quiz. Dang it is this. Tin can phone.
Hey, what's happening? It's your boy, Misfit Adi. Tin can phone. I got my partner over here, Joe Rosenberger, that is. What's happening?
Hey, what's going on, Quiz? Just sitting here with you guys again. I love it every time. Armand, man, it's good to see you. You're looking good. What's happening?
You know what? I accidentally shaved off my beard. Thanks a lot, Grandma's. I'm live from Grandma's house studio, screwing up my life. But no, that song, no matter how crap of a day I'm having, Adi, that song gets me in my high spirits. So thank you. Bless you for that. And cannot forget the artist himself, Michael Stevenson Jr. I know there's a Bernard in there, but we're going to call him.
Always good to chop it up with you guys, and as astoundingly as it may seem in COVID world, is not easy for us all four to even be together, but because we are the Triforce or the Captain Planet moment, we are our little insignia rings or little gang tats, we put them together and here we are.
Look at us. We've come a long way. Can I just say one thing? It might not be as long right now as a product for you and the audience, but as a unit, as a cohesive unit, have come a long way.
It's been over a year.
I mean, it feels like 5 years ago that we were recording in the prison doing interviews, like wondering, can we even interview people? Sure. And Michael was like, I can bring the recorder and we can tell people to come. And it was so uncertain and precarious, like, we didn't know what the we were doing. We didn't know if we were able to do anything. And now we're on episode 3 and ready to launch into these things.
I guess we started talking and thinking about these things 2-ish years ago.
Yeah.
Like we're rounding a third, like it was only even going to be a podcast maybe for a year, but was recording content for like 2 years. It was going to be a book, and then we're like, this is so good, and then blah, blah, blah. But episode 3, you are here. You heard it first, so you're hearing it now. We didn't believe it would happen, but it's happening.
It's awesome. I mean, this is a great way to transition ourselves into our topic for the day, if you want to launch us there, Michael.
Sure. I believe today we are talking about the last 30 days in, is that correct?
Yep.
Temporally is an interesting arrangement, and as everyone is experiencing, we're kind of curators. We're like when you show up somewhere and everyone shows you where the bathroom is, this is us, like, you roll up to the gate and we're like, all right, y'all, you're coming in. And this is what you're getting. And it's pertinent. The last 30 days in is kind of, while not the beginning, is in some way the beginning of your experience, because this is what's fresh on the guys' minds before they're winding up right here where they're at with you now. So in many ways, this thought process or mentality or experience is like, while it seems like the end to a lot of people who are listening, is actually the beginning of how it interfaces and starts to interact with you in your life, because the prison is keeping everyone away. And so this is how folks are coming to you. And so, yeah, Queez, why don't you kick us off with how that is striking you and how folks are going to be able to learn about that.
So long story short, I just really, really need everybody that's dealing with or supporting someone that's incarcerated right now, take your time, be patient. As we may seem like we have the answer to everything, please believe that we don't, because we haven't been able to make decisions in such a long time. So please forgive us, but we are men. Last 30 days, stressful. It's the most stressful. It's such an oxymoron, because the last 30 days is supposed to be like the best time because I'm coming home. People tend to think that, yeah, last 30 days I'm coming home, everything is good, feet kicked up, and it's the total opposite. The last 30 days I'm short-tempered, I'm confused, I'm scared, nervous, you know what I'm saying? If you ain't got everything set up, family, job, like a lot of people's not going home to that. A lot of people's not going home to that. So it's like, and if you are, you know, going to a family member house, people don't think, I'm only going to be okay for a little while, because then I become a bill. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah, like, true. Yeah, like how, like what happens when you become a bill? You begin to think that you're going to be comfortable. Oh, you know, this person has me, but you become a light bill. You become a water bill. You become food. And then, you know, not learning a trade or not learning nothing in there, I don't have any job experience. So, and then becoming a second class citizen, because once you're convicted, that's exactly what you become. You know, getting a job is damn near impossible unless it's going to be physical labor. So hopefully you don't have no injuries. So you're thinking about all this your last 30 days, you know what I'm saying? So like for me, it's confusing. It's like, what am I really going to do? Because you in there, you can make decisions kind of on the phone and kind of, you know, give a little direction. But ultimately, the person on the other side of the phone is making the decisions for you still. You know what I'm saying? So,
well, I love that you're talking about decisions, because like when you're facing your last 30 days, I mean, the entire time that you're there, like you're conscious of decisions that need to be made, but that aren't pressing down on you right now. But your last 30 days, you're like, I got to decide. First of all, everyone's trying to make decisions for you before you get out, right? And like, you're left with very little choices for yourself. And like, you're just trying to think like, man, what am I going to get from the grocery store?
Facts.
You're so overwhelmed.
Well, the last 30 days in, you got to think about this. You're distancing yourself from your friends, because you know that in their leaving is such a, you know, separation. People deal with separation anxiety because you tie yourself to people in there.
When people stop talking to you your last 30 days in.
Facts, which is a good thing, because it's the short temper. You feel me? Like you gonna perceive things different. You start seeing things different. You looking at things different. But ultimately, it's fear. And like me and Joe spoke upon off camera, when you're in fear is probably when you're at your most dangerous. And I will let Joe speak on that, but I just want to put that out there.
It's interesting. I wanted to ask, like, do you, and maybe you answered it, but like, and I definitely for listeners, they probably make the assumption that like getting ready to get out is like a chill time. Yeah. And I've actually witnessed it when people are about to get out and they're like stressed. They're like, I got to take care of my business because I'm about to be out of here. Or things are like, you know, business inside and business outside. That being said, like, do you see people like the pressure eats them and something, you know, that doesn't happens?
No, for sure. I've seen people get in fights and actually like have a conversation where I'm like, bro, what's up? You know you was going home. Like, I ain't ready. This is home. I know how to cope in here. I could do it in here. I can't really, you know, I ain't going home to nothing. So a lot of people, you got to understand, like, you have to deal with that. Like, people may wake up and their agenda is to mess up your time. You know what I'm saying? You got like your kids, you out there, you got to think about your family, good time is you going to get that. Like, it's so many different, you know, things that's like, it's on your mind that, you know, sometimes people milk. And solitude is the only thing that, you know, they could cope with, so they got to go to solitary confinement. You know what I'm saying? And again, that's just ironic that going to the hole may be the best place for you right before you go home.
Yeah. It's crazy. I know some guys that won't even tell no one their release date. Facts. You know what I mean? They keep that information to themselves because it's just like, what's the point? What's the point, you know? You'll know when you get a plastic bowl by your bedside and my mattress is all rolled up, bro. You'll know I'm gone.
Can I just say that, like the idea of release is one of the most traumatizing things, like our circumstances during incarceration. Like, for one, how you imagine yourself leaving and, like, perceiving yourself is scary. And it doesn't, like, how you measure yourself as you think you're going to be and as you are now, there's this huge gap. You're like, man, I don't know about you guys, but I was like, how am I going to get there? How am I going to get to where I need to be where I'm like, I'm good walking out of here? Because right now, most of the time, I was like, right now, I'm not good. Like, if they let me out, sure, I'd go have fun, but I don't know what the I'm going to do.
But you got to think about this, Joe. Go ahead. I'm sorry. I cut you.
No, and, well, this just ties back into what you said, Queez, about, like, decisions being made. And, like, I just keep thinking about, like, while you're there, every decision is made for you, essentially. Yes. And, like, your last 30 days, you're really facing, like, this fact that these decisions are all yours now. Like, not only do you roll up your stuff and take it with you, your books, your papers, your pens, pencils, whatever you don't leave behind, because everyone's trying to get your stuff from you. Like, they hand you your whole life and say, here, this is yours again. We didn't take care of it.
Facts.
But I'm saying, that's deep. Hold on, can we say that one more time, Joe?
Oh, this they roll is your you life. Up. Here's your life. We didn't take care of it. That's how it is. But Queez, I mean, I really want you know, Queez, I want to hear what you're about to follow up with on that.
Well, no, I was just gonna say, like, what was you speaking on right before you made that last statement?
Well, I mean, I guess we're gonna have to listen to the recording.
Exactly. It's okay. It's okay. I was holding my response, but I wanted to respond to that because
they're just like feathers in a feather and you hit it and they're like going everywhere.
I'm on the other side of the spectrum and I was wanted to speak on the other side of what you were speaking on, bro, but I had to hold it for so long that
That's okay. I mean, I said something about how, like, people are after every possession you have.
No, listen, I just thought about it. People create illusions inside. So when you go in there, you could create a story and be whoever you want to be. The scary thing is they start believing it themselves. So dudes get a little money from people on the streets. Dudes start, you know, they got a little movement. When they go home, they're like, I'm finna get a Benz. I'm finna get this. I'm finna get that. Because they could do those things in there and they could tell a female on the phone all these things that sound good and then get a little bit of her money. And they could tell their homeboys who's not gonna tell them the truth. And this is another reason, Joe, why I told you I don't do the yard, because I'm not gonna stand around with a whole bunch of people who are fake friends and tell lies to each other. I won't do it. So when people go home, they create these illusions. They got all these big ideas, and then life hit them. And that's when, doom, 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 doom.
Well, and you know what's funny, Queez, that you say that? Now I'm starting to, like, reflect on all the people that I've seen in their last 30 days, and the lying kind of stops. Like, when people are approaching that release date, they kind of stop inflating the stories and the lifestyle. And like, I got this, and I got this, and I can do this, and I've done that. And it's more like, you just see some guy who's just like, you know, he's been talking for years about the same shit that everybody else is talking about. And now all of a sudden he's like a few weeks from getting out and you just see this guy sitting on his bunk. He's not saying a word. People are trying to talk to him and he might, like, play a part in conversation, but it's just secondary. You know what I mean? People fall back. They no longer have something to build up because they're going back to what? To just
reality.
I don't know. If anybody else has a description to supply there, it'd be really useful right now. I can't do it.
Well, no, when I think of the last 30 days out, and this is just feeding on to what you're saying, I think about my last bunkie, Junior. Shout out Junior out in Hillsborough. He'd been doing 15 years, he's down, and he was on his last 30 days. And he was talking about these ideas about riding the bus, taking all of his possessions that he's had over the 15 years and riding the bus in the Max home to Hillsborough and, like, figuring it out. And I was just, and then he's like, how do you get, like, a taxi cab? And I'm, like, trying to explain to him, like, no, it's all, like, Uber now. Like, people have phones and, like, they're not just gonna let you, like, use their phone to get a ride. But like, I think people start also, depending on how long you've been down, start kind of creating like all these like ideas in their head about like what the world is and then how they're going to just like slide into it. I really like that you said that,
Armand. That was said well. Like, I really identify with that because I thought I was going to just like fit right into the world as I was leaving. Just like, boom, perfect, cohesive placement. Me in the flow and everything else. But I mean, really, they just like let you out and you're just like tiptoeing around like, okay, I'm ready to get in now. Where am I going to get? Where am I going to go? And there's a period. I mean, this is another episode, but there's a period where like your first 30 or your last 30 days sets you up to spend your first 30 days not really fitting in anywhere.
Right. Yeah.
Let's get back to the last 30 days.
Well, it's really interesting because like I actually just ran into someone who has been in for 5 years and like we were texting, like someone text looped him or something. And then like I ran into him when I was leaving the bathroom or something and he was like, oh, let me get your number or something. And I was like, we've been texting. And he's like, oh, I'm out of touch for 5 years. So there's a way in which you're like ready or you're hungry and that does like build, but then you get out and like things are not what you've it's impossible. You're like trying to envision beyond a wall. And so I've also experienced some of what the things you guys are saying I've seen, and some of the things I have also seen is like there's like this, I mean, that echoes what you were talking about, Joe, about like people not lying as much. Is like people start to get nervous, you know, they're like, oh man, is this gonna be ready? Or like you're talking to whatever officials, or you're like waiting, or they extend it for 30 days and it's ambiguous, you don't know what's going on. It feels like really uncomfortable. Like people who might have run into them in the past and they had a good day, but people when they're about to get out, it's like never looks like it looks good for them. But I wanted to, you know, bring up, and it's kind of something that we were excited to talk about, is how the system is or is not helping you get ready to get out.
If I may, because mine was shaky up until like the last 2 days that I had to get out on this transitional short-term leave. I never knew. I got approved for it. And then like four weeks out, it's like, oh, there's no beds. Actually, it was like 2 weeks. It's like, hey, there's no bed. So you probably gonna get it pushed back. Not all 90 days, but like, you feel me, a couple weeks of it. So like I can't communicate with my family on the outside like this is when I'm coming home, because I really don't know. It could be, and that's when you start having three release days, like this one, or it may be this one. As far as like, I feel like for all three of us right here, the prison allowed certain programs in there for us to be a part of and prepare ourselves for transition. Waiting on the prison itself to guide or prepare or to equip guys with the tools to be successful upon release, no. They, you know, the adults in custody, who they call inmates, the adults in custody create programs. And some programs, you know, come in, you know, however they come in through the prison, it's optional. And I've always said it's optional. Like, I decide if I want to get up and go to this class. I don't have a CO or a counselor like, okay, well, you need to do these programs and these, you know, like, these school may help you, this college may help you. As they do provide it, all it is a paper on the bulletin that says, this is here. You can do this shit you want to if you got the money to do it. So it's kind of up to us to be like, you know what? Okay, this college course, this right here, community, they come in from the streets, the community come in, it'll give me a chance to be around actual people from the streets so that I can start seeing how they act and how they get together, because they're getting together in adults in custody getting together. You feel me? That's too different. You got to watch your language. You got to, you know, kind of learn to be back into society, because once you caged up, you become a monster. And I always ask, man versus monster, safety versus sanity. You know what I'm saying? Joe, Armand, any input on that?
I mean, like my thoughts on like how the institution is designed to like, I guess to function with and like alongside a person who's about to get out, right? Because like you're there the whole time and they don't really do anything. And essentially like they're charged with corrections or rehabilitation. And then, like, the last 30 days is when they step in and they're like, oh, here we are. You've been here for 5 years, 7 years, or whatever amount of time, and we're here now, and you need to give us this information because we're going to put you somewhere, or here's a list of services you can, like, reach out for. We just collected them for you. And what else? Like, do you have any questions? And then, of course, you're so confused. You're so overwhelmed. There's so many things that you're trying to consider. You can't possibly, like, articulate a question. So you tell your counselor, or that's the only person really that exists to answer them. You're like, well, no, not really. I'm just really nervous. And they're like, oh, you're going to be fine. I do this all the time. People go home. It's cool. Go back to, like, you go back to your cell with a piece of paper and some list of, like, churches you can go to for clothes and food. And you're like, great. And you put it on your desk and you never see it again, because that's not what you're worried about. Yeah. You're like, great. I can get food from a church one time, but that's going to feed me one time, right? I can go get a shirt maybe from some clothing bin, but then where am I going to go with that shirt on my back? Because they're not going to let me stay there. They're not going to give me a job and let me keep my life going. So, like, the state is just, like, stepping in last minute to be like, hey, everybody, here's a show. Here's what we're doing.
Yeah. I mean, that's a really interesting thematic that you've kind of brought up, that prison time in some ways in service of you or something, like, you're going to go in and you'll be better. And then they're like, okay, the end of the cruise line is over. Like, here's the next step stuff. And, like, is just the elucidation of it, of them really dropping the ball of a thing they already dropped the ball on. Yeah, them not tending to the problem that they created. And also, it sounds like it's missing entirely, of which, not surprised one bit, but is entirely without compassion. So there's no human component. There's no friend. There's no pal. There's, like, a list, and, like, you can get your needs, and is again, the, like, the neglect mental health is a neglecting of the human as a whole being and needing care and support and appreciation and value and some way to be useful. It could even be unpaid labor, just somewhere to be, some people to be with.
Thanks.
Armand, I remember, like, when you were in your last 30 days, I think for a while we were on the same unit before I moved to Unit 1 and was hanging out with Queez and Ben Hall. Shout out to Ben Hall. But I remember the last meeting we had with the U of O Reading Club, and then the last meeting we had, or you had, rather, with Lib Lit. And, like, everybody was congratulating you. And what's really funny is no one ever congratulates the DOC, even though it's their job to keep you there and get you along and then put you back out. Because, like, even though we don't consciously recognize it, we're all aware that they didn't do anything. The bulk of the doing was on you. And I remember all these people saying, like, congratulations, Armand, like, we're so happy for you. And I also remember you looking, like, very detached from those moments. You're just like, your face was almost like, what did I do? Yeah. Like, I just got here. And, like, everyone's trying to be happy for you when you're just like, no, you guys think I've done something. I haven't done it yet. And no one's gonna do it for me. Like, the state is pretending. You guys think I've already done it. And here I am knowing that the bulk of what I need to do is undone. And I remember seeing that, and I wish I could have seen my own face and my own experience. And I unfortunately wasn't there to see Queez off because I got moved to a different facility. But no, Armand, I would love for you to talk about that, about how
because I had done 13 months at that point. So I wasn't so lost from the real world. I was very much, like, centric on, like, oh, like, I'm about to go out into the real world, and now I'm about to go to my mom and dad's house. I haven't been there since I was 18. Like, what business am I gonna do? Like,
well, and how old were you when you released?
I was 26, I think. 26 or 27. I can't even remember now. 26.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah, I was 26, I believe. So I was just like, yeah. First time I used to be the man out on the streets, you know what I mean? Like, not pushing Bentleys around, but I always had enough to support myself, some side chick, you know, have some stuff going on, people coming to me, a phone, people calling me, you know, business to attend to. Or I had a legitimate job, you know, stacked upon all of the other bullshit I was doing. So I had none of that. And I didn't know if that was going to be an option again. And I didn't know if I wanted it to be an option again. So I was really at a crossroads where I knew I was going back to my mommy and daddy's house. And like Quee said, right away, my folks made it very clear that I am a check. I'm a burden on their house. You know what I mean? Like, you better go work right now and go get us some money because we're struggling ourselves. So, like, you know, you've been gone. We've been giving you $100 here and there. Like, now we need that money back. So you owe us, essentially. So I'm like,
and Armana, you know what? For one, like, before I say that I'm glad about anything, I want to say that I'm very sorry. That's the circumstance. But I am glad that you identified that and that you told us all this, because, like, that is one of the most strugglesome things, if that's even a word, when you're in your last 30 days, right? Is, like, you have done what you're supposed to, right? Which we've talked about and is a very confusing and confounded subject. But anyway, you've done what you're supposed to do. You've done your fucking time. And yet you still owe people. Like, you're like, man, I've done what I had to do, but I'm going into another situation where I'm going to be in debt.
You've repaid your debt to society, and now everyone else has got their hand out.
Yeah. Like, you almost walk out of the gate, and in some ways, the world is there with their hands, like, ready for communion.
Well,
like,
so, and to really go hard on this, in the lore of Tin Can Phone, the that clip I played from Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? And they go in and they're singing on the tin can phone and the black dude's strumming on the banjo. And then they're like excited. They like wrote their name with an X and they got like $10 or whatever. And then these like fat, literally fat, dressed in all white politicians are like walking in. And, you know, George Clooney's characters is like, they'll pay you to sing in their tin can. And he's like, I ain't singing on a can. I ain't making a record. I'm going, they're putting me on the radio. And it's like, the reason I even left it in the clip for the show was it was this weird moment where these guys who literally are former convicts who have escaped from prison, they've just had some kind of value, they're really excited about it, and this giant behemoth, both in body and form, still have their, they're like big ships moving through, crushing what's on its path. And so, and those, then, and when we were talking, it's like, yeah, like in Norman's case, it was his family when he got home, it's not those people in white suits. It's the people between them. They are being crushed by the people in the white suits too. And the system is crushing everyone. And people who are getting incarcerated are not, you know, it's sad, and not because it's sad it has happened in each individual instance, but as a society that we've created a situation where it is oppressed peoples who are helping the oppressed peoples. And there's emotional tension in that situation, which is terrible and horrible. And it does, there, sometimes it's a Cinderella story, and often it's that same old story. It's not the Cinderella story, it's everyone else at the foot that's too big or too small or something.
Yeah. I knew, like, just to be like blatantly honest, like, I knew where I was paroling to. You know, I didn't choose a halfway house. I had the blessing to have my folks, but I knew what came with that. Sure. New addiction and you know, substance use, all that stuff was going to be right in my face. And it's just going to be like, you know, do you want to, if you decide this, like, but like, I wanted something different for my life. So it really.
And that was on you. That was on you inside. And that was on you when you got out. You know what I mean? And that is what needs to happen. And hopefully as a project and a team, we can create space for. But as you're hearing, listeners, a lot of that is like where people are landing. It can be the sheet that was supposed to be a trampoline and you just smash through into the ground, or something with some give, you know, that can let mistakes happen and can keep on giving.
Quees had a different situation. I know, because you did your trans leave like in more of like a public transitional housing. So can you want to speak a little bit about like what the state at least provides in the sense of that? And that's only in Multnomah County too.
That's like, I didn't sign up to go to the transitional house, you hear me? Like, they denied my address, bro. It was just, like I said, my last 30, didn't even know if I was gonna have a date, didn't even know, you know, where my address was gonna be, didn't know any of that till the last minute. I went to the Shoreline downtown Portland, you know, and the good thing about the Shoreline is I had my own space, you feel me? Like, I had a little apartment. It's in an old motel building.
But every room is its own apartment. You get your stove with the two eyes, you know, window, your bed, your little TV. You don't get the TV, but your little table. I had everything in there. So to me, it was a blessing because it was my own space. Where other halfway houses and other places you go, it's a house and you're sharing a room with two or three people. Then it's like a bathroom and you don't really get your own space. So, and for me, like all I ever wanted was solitude. So all I ever wanted, cause I knew I had a baby mom, I knew I had a daughter, I knew I had all these things I was coming home to, and I was ready to come home to that. But I also knew that coming from that cage, I had to digress. I had to take that time to chill and get in tune with reality, being that this was my second time, equaling up to 10 years, seven times the first time, and 7 years the first time, and 3 years this time. So I knew what coming home and coming home hot was gonna do. Being a father and trying to figure that out, I knew I had to. So the Shoreline was a blessing to me because I didn't have to go directly into her house and try to figure that out. I had the time to go there, get a job, learn what it was like to get up at 6 a.m. and go to work and get off at a certain time and, you know, and get back programmed. So the state did, in a way, help my transition by giving me the chance to be in my own space compared to another halfway house where, you know, you got to share a room with two or three people and, you know, share the bathroom and stuff like that.
Exactly. And they might be getting high and everything. Joe, I know you probably had a different experience. I know you had a question for Queez, but you can bring that question on to Queez, but you can also speak upon, I know since you're fresh out, it's been a couple months now, but your situation was different too.
Well, and I just also want to say, thank God the system did something, you know, like, as a project. Maybe they didn't get everything wrong, and hopefully we can suss that out. But when it works, like, thank God, that's what they're supposed to be doing.
I definitely didn't expect us to be like identifying successful like outcomes with like by the hand of the system, right? But here we are, and I'm actually glad for it because we can't just like be like, oh, we're gonna haphazardly go after the entire structure and tear everything down, because there are useful components of it. And like, what I guess this conversation needs to be more like deliberate in that way of identifying what's good that's happening so that we can hopefully channel resources to what's good. Facts. Instead of just like, we're taking everything.
It's the
good and bad.
Reality though, like I said, they sometimes provide certain spaces, but it's up to us. They're not going to tell us what, like, I did, like, the Shoreline is downtown Portland on 2nd and Cooch, bruh. You feel me? So, like, that is Dope Fiend Central. That is Drug Central.
Chinatown.
So it's the strong-mindedness that I had that due to the state in Columbia River, the programs that they allowed in, Arts and Social being one of them, Lib being the other one, yada, I mean, family, I was able to learn what it was like to be in reality and was taught that, hey, where you're going, it's infected with all of this. So you got to think for the OSM, I'm strong in the mind. So I couldn't fail. So, but for average Joe, going to the Shoreline, bro, as soon as you walk out your door, there's a shelter right there. There's nothing but dope, and it's right there. There's no escaping it.
So I just want to speak upon being from Portland. That's just how it's been. Those hotels have been owned by the state in as transitional houses, and people know what time it is. That's why you could see the guys that are fresh out and then freshly getting lit, because, like, you know, bro, they just did 5 years, 15 years, whatever, and they have a lot of pain. They want to shoot heroin and because they have nowhere to go. They're lost, et cetera. Yeah, Mr. Joe.
System go. Shouts out James Hanley.
Well, I just want to say, Queez, like, you just identified that, like, one of the biggest things that helped you, from what I understood you saying, is that, like, you had programs while you were there, and then you had a good program when you got out. The good program when you got out could have been bad if you had came into it bad, but the good programs you were in while you were in set you up to approach this program, which could have been a precarious situation. Like, we don't know which way he's gonna go. Is he gonna be in his room reading, or is he gonna be out with the dope fiends? Like, clearly you got in the mindset of doing good shit, being like in your room, focused, writing poetry, reading, talking to people, having good conversations, discussing how you feel and how you relate to the world. That's how you were primed for that, because you chose to do it inside because those options were available to you. Right. And it's a different story for people who don't even have that availability inside, and they just go out and they're like, well, I'm sitting in my room. And I gotta tell you, since I've been out, I've been sitting in my room in my own place, and I'm like, wow, I don't have anything to do, and I feel like I'm in prison.
All right.
And
net worth. You feel me? Yeah. I've been thinking about net worth. I got to think about my daughter eating, you know what I'm saying, royalties and things like that. So, like I said, just strong in the mind. I was never a dummy. I've been educated, and we always speak on educate. So, like, I've been educated. I knew, like, well, how can I feed my daughter, and how can I make my money work for me? So, yeah, two books we wrote. Shout out. We got the books coming. We got the music, and my daughter, she co-wrote my books. That's what it is. My music, she's co-editing, she's co-directing. Like, we just got a revenue network, you feel me? You got to own something. You got to own something to ever, you feel me, be successful. Like, you're going to always be in debt. Free ain't free for our people, you feel me? Free ain't free for our people. We got to stop killing each other. We got to stop the violence, start coming together and running business. Invest in people, don't invest in business, because without the people, the business ain't going to grow. You know what I'm saying? It's people over profit. I just want y'all to know that, man. Y'all got to stop killing each other, bro. That gangbanging shit is out, man. You know what I'm saying? Be a representation of your community, but you ain't got to kill nobody else for representing theirs. You know what I mean?
Yeah, man. I really appreciate you peppering that in, and am excited for the kind of like ongoing themes that we'll be able to have access to as a project. But I did want to also echo between what Cleese and Joe was saying is the system that was a character and is like an irremovable character, and individuals, and in this instance, Joe, Quiz, Armand, y'all are characters, but the Liblit and the Arts and Social Practice and all these other things are like citizen organized efforts. And so the things that like the state allowed to happen were individuals from the community coming in, touching base, providing skills, offering resources, and remains. And like, I was just at a fallen brother's house yesterday, and he's like kind of coming off of the like, you know, stuff after coming out of prison, coming off the stuff after, you know, it's like, is having a time. And it remains these citizen organized entities that are continuing to support. And so the state sometimes plays a role, and sometimes that service can be beneficial and is appreciated, but it is also almost never without guidance from non-state individuals that it will work, that the person using these resources can actually benefit them and doesn't just relapse from some issue. And I guess for future pickings, which we will touch upon, I continue to see that mental health among folks who are aware of it and unaware of it remains a need unmet. So,
super unmet.
Yeah.
I love how you just you talked us through how volunteers are essential to like people recovering within the last 30 days, like, or getting ready to get out and recover from the experience, right? And that is essentially what we have. Like, our group is a unit that is made from that, from like Michael, you came in, you volunteered. You didn't have to, like, you're not a state person. You are your own person independently coming in. And like, you met each of us individually. And like, we all somehow knew each other through other groups. And like, I don't know, we are an example of a successful.
I mean, we really are.
Of a successful unit of people. Like, we met
we
you.
Really are.
Yeah.
We are not just like, people shouldn't be like, you know, Tin Can Fun did it. It's like, by God. Holy, we made it somehow, some kind of way we made it. Is a long shot in all kinds of situations, and among even my own tenure, which is limited, like half or more slip again. And people who don't slip or slip in a way where they go back are struggling, are uncomfortable, like it's not cool, and even us are grappling with some stuff. So when it looks good, it's almost just barely.
Yeah, seriously.
I know I can speak for myself here and say that, like, even though we are succeeding as a group that like gathered in the prison when everything was against us, success especially, I've had my own struggles despite the successful group and project we have going here. And I know that each of us has. I mean, I can't just say that's for those of us that have been incarcerated. But in that particular context, like, even with support and being a part of something and like being given group confidence and like being given group purpose, despite all those things that build up a person, like the experience is entirely crippling. And it manifests very heavily in the last 30 days when, like, you, for one, I know that I felt so heavily alone those last 30 days. Like, I knew I was leaving everything that I knew, because I was going into something I didn't know and with people I hadn't been around in 5 years. And this group, I mean, I don't know about Quiz and Armand, but was like very grounding for me, since you guys were there with me and then are now with me, and we are with each other out of there with Michael, who came in from the outside, who, like, I don't know about you guys, but like seeing Michael twice a week in the prison and watching him leave, it was almost like he didn't exist when he wasn't there, you know? And I hate to say that, because I know you did, but like, I didn't really believe in anything outside of what was happening in classroom 4 at Columbia River when you met us there. And when you left, that it's like, okay, I'm back to what I need to survive again. And just like having you in my life, like calling me like, hey, you should reach out to me if you need help, because I'm here for you. Those things have really kept me going. Those things made me not feel so alone in the last 30 days.
I mean, it's interesting too, like those things anyone can do. And I say that a lot, like people are like, wow, this is a cool project. Do you work with the guys? It's like, I mean, I'm taking a very accessible role. Like, anyone can support someone in that way. That being said, I did write you, and you only wrote back one time. This guy, he's got a whole schedule in there, that guy. He's like,
Mike, you're wrong, brother. Anybody can't do it. It's hard to really support them guys on the inside. Fact that you're not trying, and these and dudes feel the way they feel about you, that says something about your character, brother. But it's not easy. A lot of people fail at trying to support them guys on the inside. A lot, and I'm talking about close people, family. Like, it's hard. It's hard. It's a hard job.
But wait, Quiz, it's hard to allow someone to support you.
Facts.
And I love that. Like, even though I'm ashamed and embarrassed that I never wrote Mike back, besides the one time.
I'm just playing.
I know.
You did write me back, and it was weird because it was to an address. Somehow, it was the right thing.
The point is, like, it was hard for me to accept that support. And I know, Quiz, you and I talked about this a lot when we were in the Lewis and Clark and the PSU classes, because, like, I kept telling you, like, man, I don't want to go back. I don't want to go back to LibLit. I love it, but I can't go back.
Right.
And because I know that these people, like, I know who I am next to these people, and I can't let them talk to me, like, be kind and support me, because I know who I am, and they must be mistaken, you know.
Yeah, that's called trauma, brother. That's trauma. You can't accept it because you ain't used to it. You know, you've been hurt, and you've been hurt by the ones close to you, and you got that wall up. So anybody that may seem that they're nice, or some may seem that they're close to you, you're gonna be defensive to that, because it's not really your reality. It's not really your life growing up, or upon becoming an adult in custody. So of course, how could you give a fuck about me? How could you care about me? How could you want to just see me do good or see me win? Like, we're not going to accept it. And usually the people that's really there for us is the ones that we push away. You know what I'm saying? Because it's the law of attraction. You're not ready to accept that. You're not willing to, your mind, because God's going to send it your way. You know what I'm saying? It's going to be for you to accept it. And we have to unlearn everything upon us being released, because everything then was just survival, fight or flight from that moment. Please. Especially from what you've seen growing up and then going into that situation. Hey, it's hard, brother. It's hard.
Do you remember the other day we were talking on the phone, and we were talking about how, like, when all you know is loss, when all you know is what it's like to lose things,
facts,
then that's all you, like, allow into your life. Essentially, you get rid of things before you lose them.
Facts.
And in the last 30 days, like, all you've ever known is the last whatever years, months, everything is what it's been like to be without, right? And when like the promise of everything coming to you, the, like, supporting relationships that you, like, these things that you've, like, cultivated in classes, in groups, in clubs, like, all that's available. It's right there. But, like, you're almost like, I don't want any of that. I don't want that, because, like, I'm so secure in having nothing, and have been for years.
It was opposite for me, brother. Like, to back what you were speaking on with Arts and Social and Live Lit, I dove into that because usually inner city kids, they join gangs. Why? Because they need that to feel a part of something. They need to feel that, you know, I'm a part of this. You know, Pop's gone, Pop's still gone. The homies is gone. We grew up to let the streets be our fathers, but when you get locked up, the streets is gone. When you make a choice that I'm not gonna promote sending my little dudes to kill and throw their lives away, and I'm not gonna promote poison in my city or you know, my community, you gotta choose something else. So for me, I dove into these programs as if I was diving into the gang, you feel me? Like, I had to be a part of something. I told a couple members of Live Lit, like, hey, I really gotta be a part of this, so I hope y'all ready. Cause when I come home, like, I'm finna really, you know, and we finna push. And it was so surprising to them that somebody actually came home from prison, because it was broken promises so many times that when people come home from prison, they was gonna join the group and they was gonna be there. So many times they didn't. So when I came home and I was present and I really was pushing, it's like I pushed too, like they just didn't even understand how to handle me. You know what I'm saying? They didn't understand the weed smoke, the pan sagging. They didn't understand that I'm in the streets with it. They didn't understand we coming with it, because I got to go hard over here, because idle hands is the work of the devil. You know what I'm saying? If I get idle and I don't feel like I'm a part of this, I'm finna go back to game. I'm finna go back to what I know, which is the losing mindset. And I always tell the youth, get rid of that what I used to know mindset. Because when you come in with the mindset, if it don't work, I go back to what I used to know, you're already setting yourself up to go back to what you used to know. So you may put in one job application, and when that one application don't go, you already back to, you know, what you used to know. So, you know, it's different. I dove into the programs to have a part and be a part of something so that I didn't go back to what I knew.
That's awesome.
It's interesting, like, there's something that you said, Queez, a while ago that has stuck with me and I want to bring up, but Joe, when you were kind of like asking the question, I was thinking of like a dog, right? Like, and you know, when you have, like when you rescue a dog or something and it like kind of acts real crazy, you know, like, oh, like this thing happened, like it got traumatized, or, you know, like, and it's like people almost understand it with a dog, but like with a human, it's like, cut it out, pull up your bootstraps, let's go. And there's this invisibilization of this stuff. You're like messed up. And it's like, act straight and all the stuff. But I think that's the other thing, because when what Joe was saying is like, when you only know how to let misfortune in, that's like what you let in, or you attract it. It's like your whole life is designed around it. You don't even, like, sometimes people, you know, they want to be in relationships, but they don't know how to be loved because they never were. And so these things, they need to be taught, they need to be coached. And sometimes that happens in prison, and usually it's with the support of other guys inside, or a program, usually a program done with outside support, and has been discussed, at least by this caucus. Programs that are properly run by the state are like weirdly academic and like not actually helpful. And very rarely in certain prison systems all over the world, sometimes you learn a vocational skill, and often you can't use the skill that you learn because you can't get a job there. So that dichotomy is interesting. But something that Queez said a long time ago when we were recording kind of the intro for the book, and I can't remember, I think it got edited out, but just because there wasn't enough space, but I might have tried to literally capture only that. Queez said that, like, when you were young, and I mean, you might remember, it's something about the jungle, and like when you're in the jungle, we're born into the jungle, and your families, they teach you what you need to survive in the jungle. And then you go through the stuff, but that stuff is not what you need to be like mentally healthy. That stuff is not really how to be a good parent. That stuff is like survival stuff. And that's come up in this conversation too. Like, people, you sometimes, when you don't know what to do, you default to survival, and the way that you survive is damaging to yourself or others. And so in that conversation earlier, you're like a snake, and you're in the jungle, and you got to shed that skin. And it's interesting too, and I wanted to bring this up, and I was thinking about it before, because each of you in your own lives and our own recent past have, you know, had some of that old skin on. And I'm like, dog.
Yes.
That skin, you are done with that skin, and you need to shimmy it off and get to the next thing. And I know you know it, because that analogy, that wisdom, you taught me that. And so, you know, but like that keeps happening and keeps needing to happen and needs to be reminded. But we figured out, I wanted to bring that up in this conversation.
Queez, and possibly Joe, question then, why do you think, and this isn't, and this, it does pertain to the first 30 days, pertains to getting out, but why do we self-sabotage? I know I do it so much. Joe, I've seen glimmers of it. I don't want to speak upon too much from when you've gotten out, but Queez, I know that you have your own ways. Why do we do it, man?
I said it three times and Joe put me up on it. Fear.
Fear of failure. I would say that, like, when all you know how to do is pick yourself up out of ruins, you're going to find yourself in some ruins.
Ooh. That was the one right there. When you only know how to pick yourself out of ruins, you're going to find yourself up in some ruins.
Exactly.
Oh, man, that's some wise stuff. And Joe, how old are you?
I also want to say, Michael, I'm really glad that you brought up something that Queez had said previously, because in my recent conversations with Queez outside of the group, just between us, Queez will call me and I'll be talking, and I realize that I am saying something that Queez taught me. And like various times, and I'm sure almost all your relationships, Queez, and friendships and everything, like, you've taught people things, and what I didn't even know that was in me still. Nice. But I found myself saying it to you, and I was like, hold on a second, Queez, you're the one that told me this.
So this is the interesting thing, right? No, a lot of people won't give you recognition, which I don't do it for recognition, but a lot of people don't show love or, you know, show appreciation for other people until they're dead. So if you notice me, I tell you I love you. I tell you what you mean to me, and I always, you know, let you know, like, bruh, you my brother. Like, and that don't mean what they mean, like, when they said, because they said loosely. Because I need y'all to know that, because I recently read that you got to talk to everybody as if how you would want them to perceive and be if you don't ever talk to them again. You know what I'm saying? So, like, I just want y'all to know, like, I need y'all to know. But it's what's interesting is when we was talking and you was telling me these things, I had no clue that it was things that I was telling you that I told you before, because I was so lost in what was going on that. And when you said it, I was like, oh, shit, that's true. Like, that's some real game right there. Like, that's dope. And then you caught it, like, bro, like, you told me that. But I was so lost, and I'm so not that person or in that mindset that even words from myself didn't sound familiar to me. And y'all have taught me with my own words. Never be too, in my final thoughts, never be too hard to learn. Never be too hard. Never be too hard to express your feelings. Kevin Gates always said it, and I live by it. It's cheaper to be yourself, I promise you. Those that are like you are gonna gravitate to you. Those that aren't, and don't try to make them. You know what I'm saying? Ain't no room out here for a misfit.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's like really interesting, and something that I got some feedback on our episode one or around that universe, where folks were saying, there's something really poetic about how I don't actually have male friendships. And like at this point in my life, 90% of my male friendships are folks that I met in prison. And it is that place, that crucible of knowledge and experience and vulnerability that produced some form of like male person that I would want to enjoy spending time with. Otherwise, it's not something I gravitate towards by preference, desire, or that it's meeting any of my needs. And so want to echo that is happening, I guess, not just for me, and that it is happening on this show and beyond it. And for folks tuning in, like, this is what you're getting. It won't stop. We won't stop. Set us free. And Joe, what are we talking about next week? And we'll just knock this out of the park.
Next week, we're going to be talking about the first 30 days out, immediately after the first 30 days or the last 30 days in. I mean, I guess tune in to find out, but I would say that it is a huge twist and complete contrast compared to what we discussed today.
You said something really interesting. You're like, oh man, if only we could talk about this in a direct way. Or someone said something that was like, we can. We are here. We have come and we will conquer. Queez, Armand, where are we going? Let's get out of here.
You already know it's Pooseface. Pooseface to kill ain't many illa. Thank you guys for staying tuned to another episode of Tin Can Phone. My boy Adi, what you gotta say to him?
Hey man, it's that boy Misfit Adi on all platforms. Go with your guy. Listen, we are Boofu. Buy us, for us, we for the people, we for the community. I always just try to spread the knowledge, man, quit killing each other, man, quit the violence, man, black on black, black on anything, bro. Like, we finna be an extinct people, and it's because of us. I just wanna leave a question on your mind. Is it worse for a white cop to kill a black man or another black man to kill a black man? Huh?
Too real to be famous. Joe, do you got anything to say?
We're out. They're in our ear.
Michael, the artist.
Out of here. See y'all
next time. Adios, guys. We'll see you next time, and thanks again for tuning in to Tin Can.
You are listening to the Tin Can Phone Podcast, where you can hear about the influence incarceration has straight from the source. We tell the story from the inside out. So make sure to check us out on KBOO Community Radio every first Tuesday at 10 a.m. You can also check us out on Spotify, Apple, and anywhere you catch your podcasts. And make sure to give us a follow over at tincanphonepodcast.com. See you next time.
KBOO, Portland, Oregon.
This is Times Like Now, and I'm Trevor Collins. The grunge music scene of the 1990s, without question, was born in Seattle, Washington. Along with the bands and the labels, one radio station stands out. 107.7 The End helped launch the Seattle sound. My guest today, Marco Collins, was vital to bringing grunge to the radio waves. Today on Times Like Now.
Howdy, Marco. How are you this evening? Thank you for being on the show.
Yeah, thank you, Trevor. I appreciate you having me on.
Right. So I'm going to go back to my earliest memory of hearing you on the radio at the end. Coming from Portland, me and friends would come up to Seattle, see shows. We're always looking forward to when are we in the zone? When can we get, this was obviously before internet.
Right.
And we were